Let me first give you the outline, a little outline, and you need not take it down, of course, but you'll remember it. The outline of the purifying of love. Love often begins with attraction. And so love often begins with, I want you. I want you. The couple we married yesterday afternoon here and in Illinois. He saw her at City Baptist High School a number of years ago. Walked up to her first time he ever saw her, and he said, I'm going to marry you. I'm going to marry you. She walked away. She didn't like him. For a year, she didn't like him. He walked up. One day on the school bus, he leaned up and said, I love you. She got up and moved. She didn't like him at all. He got so upset about it. On her birthday, he gave her a present, beautifully wrapped present. She opened it, and it was a dead rat. I told the people yesterday, a fellow do that. He gave her a live rat yesterday for a husband. Now, he didn't love her. He wanted her. And that's not love. Nothing wrong with it. If it's within the bounds of purity, nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with a man saying, I want her. That's a dumb reason to marry her. Because if you don't want her anymore, after you've gotten the Illinois license, it's too late. But it starts off that way. I want you. And then as it goes through its stages of purification, secondly, it would say, I want to help you. I want to help you. And then from there, it would go to this stage, I want to help you. I realize that I cannot be everything in your life. I realize that I cannot give you all that you need in one person. So I'm willing to help you. I'm willing to let others help you also. But the main thing is, I want to be a part, just a part. Now we are going through the process of the purifying of love. First, I want you. Second, I want to help you. Third, I want to help you. Fourth, I want you helped. Even if I can't, I want you helped. I want you to have what you need. I can't do it. Let another do it. You see the purification of that love? Started off saying, I want. Then it went, I want you to have and I want to give it to you. And then it went, I can't give it all to you, so I want to help, have a part in some way. But then the final purification of love steps in the shadows if needs be and says, I want you helped. If I can do it, I'd prefer that. If I cannot do it, I'll accept that. I want you helped. One of the most difficult things in life is for us to take our hands off something that has been dependent upon us all of our lives. The other day, in July, early July, I drove past a place that is very sacred to me. It's the place where our first child went to school for the first time. And I stopped at the sidewalk out in front of the school. And there's a little covered walkway, a little canopy-like thing that leads probably 50 feet up to the school. Becky, who's now 34, when she was just 6, didn't have kindergarten in those days in Texas. In the first place, we don't need it. It doesn't take us as long to learn as it does you Yankees. But anyway, when she was 6 years old, I took her to school that morning and let her out of the car and cried a half a day. Now by the time Cindy got to school. We'd already had four. I said, honey, it's up that way, two blocks. But that first one is a traumatic thing. Our grandchild, Jacqueline, is starting the school for her first day tomorrow. And Jack and Cindy are going through the valley of the shadow as she goes. Not because that Cindy's not upset because Jacqueline's leaving, but because she's going to be left alone with little Kenny, which is dangerous. But it's a traumatic thing. It really is. And it's hard when you've been their entire life. I mean, everything they've ever had, you gave it to them. Now all of a sudden, you've got to share them. You come to a place to where you realize that you cannot be everything they need. And they go off to school. And you realize that you help provide for them now, but no longer do you totally provide for them. Same is true at weddings. All of a sudden, the things you've done before, you no longer get to do. You've been responsible for their rearing. And the truth is, they now, whatever we call love, which I don't think usually is even close to Bible love, but as man counts love, they love somebody else more than they love you. And if love is this, and it is not, but if we want to define love this way as wanting somebody, they'd rather be with somebody else than to be with you. It's a maturing process. And if you accept it graciously, as we must, it becomes the purifying of our love. I realize that our children are gone. I realize that I can no longer be to them what I once was. I realize that the only thing I'm good for is alone. Dad, I need some money. No fun, no mon, your son. Too bad. So sad. Your dad. But I have to realize that. I had to realize it when they married, that no longer was I responsible in the ways I used to be. I've said to each of our sons-in-law, I ask you one thing, so I'll ask for you of you. Be good to our daughter. If you don't care a thing about me, that doesn't bother, well, it bothers me, but I'll still love you. If you don't agree with the thing I preach, I'll still love you. Just be good to our girl. That's all I ask you to do. Just be good to her. But it's not easy. Mary was at that place in her life. She had gladly accepted her lot in life, which was to carry in her own body, in her own womb, the Messiah, to labor and travail that God might become flesh and be born the same way that everybody else that's ever lived except Adam and Eve have been born. She's willing to give up everything else and just be the mother of the earthly Christ child. She teaches him. She trains him. She admonishes him. She cooks for him. She cleans house for him. She mends clothes. She washes clothes for him. She irons clothes for him. She keeps a home for him. Now all of a sudden, she's reached her limits. He's outgrown the place to where he can only be satisfied and cared for by one person. All of a sudden, Mary finds that he belongs to God first. Now she knew this. She knew the day was going to come, but somehow, even though you know the day is coming, you're not prepared for it. And when it comes, you're not ready for it, don't know how to respond to it. Now all of a sudden, he's 12 years old. They lose him. Where is he? After 3 days, they find him in the temple, asking questions, stumping the learned men. And Mary comes and says, thy father and I have sought thee. And Jesus caught it just like that. He said, wist ye not that I must be about my father's business? He was telling her about the virgin birth again. He was reminding her of the virgin birth. He was reminding her that Joseph was not his father, but that God was his father. And that he was conceived in her womb with the Holy Spirit. But Mary must all of a sudden have her love purified. She must accept the fact that it's letting go time. Oh, he'll still live in her house. He'll still, as most teenagers do, come by for a visit when he gets hungry. Or he needs some money. Or needs a ride to an activity. But the truth is, she's going to have to let go of him some. And she, being human like you are, has the same problem. That's one reason why you folks that have children going to school for the first time, within 3 weeks you'll hate the school teacher. Because that school teacher's going to hate you. And I'm going to hate you both, because I've got to settle the argument. But the truth is, it's not easy to let go. She has, her love must be purified. She must transfer from a desire to help him to a desire to help him. And then soon the day is going to come that she must realize someone else will have to help him. She'll have to let go of him altogether. She'll have to let someone else provide for his needs. And she'll no longer be able to care for him. Her love must be purified. Illustration. Nearly 40 years ago, I became pastor of a Baptist church. I did everything in the church. I turned on the heat in the morning. We had a wood stove. I built the fire. When we finally had a oil stove, kerosene stove, I lighted the kerosene stove. I turned on the heat. I turned on the lights for the services. I cleaned the building. I scrubbed the commode. The lavatories myself. Every Monday morning, I'd go to the church and I'd clean the building. Mop, dust, clean the toilets. I mowed the yard of the church. I filled the baptistry. Every Sunday we baptized, I'd fill the baptistry myself and drain it on Monday and clean it. I prepared the Lord's Supper. I didn't know you could buy it at Christian bookstores and stuff. I didn't know you could. Cooked it myself. Got me some flour and water and mixed it together and put it on the stove, and we had burned bread for the Lord's Supper. But I cooked it myself. I poured the grape juice in the little glasses for the Lord's Supper myself. I didn't know that you had things, little spigots on them. You could just put the glass here and squeeze something and fill. I didn't know that. I just got the thing and poured it. That's my job. I printed the church bulletin, typed it up, bought me a mimeograph machine, a hand crank one, for I think $15, $20, $25, and bought a used typewriter. It wasn't a large carriage typewriter. Couldn't put the wide thing in there, so I had to cut it down the middle, the stencil down the middle, and type the bulletin on one side and another bulletin, and I had to seam it back together and put it on the mimeograph machine, run off that side, then run off the other side. I printed the church bulletin every week. Every Monday morning, I didn't have an office at that time. Every Monday morning, I would sit at the communion table. Union table, nothing, little house table, not that big square down here. And I would write a longhand letter to every visitor that visited our services the day before. Sometimes we'd have 50 visitors. I'd write every one of them a longhand letter. Start the first letter I'd write that morning, that would be, my dear Mr. and Mrs. Jones, what a joy it was to have you. We're always glad to have visitors. We hope you're blessed. If you're new in our neighborhood, we hope you'll consider our church. I hope you were blessed. I hope that you'll come back and see us again. If I can ever be any help to you, let me know. Last letter was, Dear Mr. and Ms. Jones, thanks for coming. Sincerely. I wrote letters to every new member of our church. Everybody that had joined the church on Sunday or gotten saved. I handwrote those letters myself at the altar of the church. It took me almost a half a day every Monday morning. I mimeographed the Sunday school outline every week for teachers and officers meeting. Always have had an outline like we do now for teachers and officers. I mimeographed it myself. In Vacation Bible School, I was Silly Billy. Then I would have them, somebody lead a song. I'd go and change and become Puidini. One at a time, I've had to give these things up. And I could not tell you how difficult it's been for me through these years to give up many of these things. Now, it was easy to give up cleaning that commode. No problem at all. None whatsoever. But I couldn't tell you how I cried when the first time I didn't print the bulletin myself. And naturally, I thought the bulletin that was printed was lousy. Because nobody could do it like I could do it. But step by step, through all these years, as the church has gotten bigger, as the churches I pastored have gotten larger, and their duties have become so multitudinous, I've had to give them up. I got a custodian. Hired a secretary. 4 hours a week. I used to have, here at First Baptist Church, I used to conduct the youth activities years ago. Some of you folks that are middle-aged now, you can recall when Brother Hiles used to have the activities here in the youth department of our church. I used to have a little league ball team on Saturday. 4 teams, softball. We'd meet down at Riverside Park, and every Saturday I'd spend all morning with them. And we had a league, and I umpired for the boys. One by one, I've had to give up all of these things. I guess one of the hardest things I ever faced in my life was to give up the visiting of the sick. All of a sudden, I realized that I could no longer, the church was out of bounds as far as that was concerned. I could no longer keep the church going. The church had absolutely fall apart. I had to give up that and give it to this good man here who spends his entire life doing it. It's a full-time job. One of the hardest things I ever did. Second to that, the hardest thing I've given up is right up there. When I realized that it's more important for me to be over there at the office counseling the people after the service and trying to help people than baptizing. One of the hardest things I ever did in my life was to give up the baptizing. But one at a time. Now I spend my life arranging for you to be cared for. I've had to get behind the scenes most of the time. But if I weren't behind the scenes, it wouldn't be anybody at the front of the scenes. Somebody's got to keep all this massive thing going. Somebody's got to approve everything. Somebody's got to oversee everything. Somebody's got to keep us from going under financially. Somebody's got to administrate. Somebody's got to handle over 500 people that get some form of a salary, part-time or full-time, from our ministries here. Somebody's got to prepare the sermons and do the counseling and so forth. And I guess, to be frank with you, I miss the contact. Very, very much. I spend my life arranging for you to be cared for. There's never a youth activity here, but what I'm a part of it. I mean that I have something to do with approving it or helping plan it or helping finance it. There's never a bus promotion, but what I have something to do with it. You don't know that. There's never a speaker in the high school or college or junior high school, but somehow I was involved in some way with it. And to be quite frank with you, I fret a great deal. I shouldn't, but I fret a great deal over what would happen. who would care for you if I were gone. I have no premonition about being taken, but I worry about it. I said this morning, I want you to be loved. I want you to have somebody that cares for you. And my love has been purified through these years. I don't like it, but I'm willing to let this man right here do what I'd rather do than most anything I know. As long as you're cared for. And I can see that you're cared for. I'm willing to let this man here operate the college. Something I'd like to do. But I can't do it. If I do it, I'll do it at the expense of all the rest of the work here. So I'm willing to do it. And by the way, my love is purified enough, I'm willing for you to love him more than you love me. If you do, you're sort of an idiot. But I'm willing, I'm willing for the folks at the college, put Dr. Evans first and put me second. That doesn't matter. You say, what are you trying to say? There was a day when I wanted to be number one. I wanted to help you. If I couldn't help you, I didn't want your help. But that's gone now. That's gone. I just want your help. If you bus workers want to put Brother Moffitt number one or Brother Young, that's fine. You folks at work and teach in the grade school want to put Brother Sisson number one, that's fine. Hasn't always been that way. There was a day when I wanted to do it. I didn't want you necessarily. I didn't want you anything from you. I didn't want to love you because what you could do for me, though I enjoy it, but my love was for what I could do for you. But the day came when I was willing, I realized that I no longer could do it all. I no longer could have the intimate contact with you. I'd have to get in the shadows and let other people have the intimate contact. And I'd have to rejoice in the fact that you were getting helped. And by the way, there's not a church alive anywhere in the world, and I doubt there ever has been one, that has as many things to try to help the people as First Baptist Church of Hammond has. I guarantee you that. Oh, I enjoy it every once in a while when I can be with some of the kids. I enjoy it every once in a while if I can go to the college and maybe have a couple hours to cut up a little bit. Gives me a taste of it. Makes me want it more all the time, I guess. But I'm saying that we've got to come to a place in our lives to where our love is purified. No longer is it, I want you. I want you. Though I do want you, but that isn't it. The big thing is, I want to help you. And then there comes a more purifying of love. I cannot be all you need by myself. Mary said that. All of a sudden Mary said, I cannot be it. She said, why, son, why hast thou thus dealt with us? Why, son, have you done this to us? Mary was having that hold on syndrome. But Mary, you've got to let go now a little bit. You can't be to Jesus all he needs now. Oh, you can still be a part of what he needs, but you can't be all he needs. And I want to tell you, Cindy, Jack, and all the Cindys and Jack Scops in this church tomorrow, be waving goodbye to you boys and girls. I want to tell you that saying goodbye tomorrow is only the beginning. I mean, when that umbilical cord was cut, it started a severance that'll continue until your deathbed. And you're not going to say goodbye and let go of something tomorrow and that's it. No, it'll be a constant letting go from now on. Now, the mother whose son gets married and won't let go of her son causes friction and trouble. Her love has not been purified. Mamas, let little Ferdinand go. Or a Nerdifan. Let him go. I mean, look, you can't be to him what she can. I mean, your kisses just don't measure up anymore. And it's time now, Mary, for you to realize that for 12 years,
He's dependent upon you totally, but your love must be purified. You've got to let him go. I mean, you've got to realize somebody else has got to help you be what he needs, and the day's going to come. The day's going to come when you'll totally have to let go. I dread that. I have one fear in life, just one fear, and you've heard me say this. I don't think I'm afraid of anybody. I don't think the man lives, I don't care who he is, that I'm afraid of. If I met him on the street and he says he's going to whip me, I don't think the man lives that I'm afraid of. But I do have one great fear. I fear that someday I'll have a stroke or something, have to sit in a wheelchair down here, and I can't be to you what I want to be. May I ask you, as I've done once or twice before in these 27 years, if that ever comes, let me be a part-time custodian. Let me put the psalm books in the racks. Don't take away from me totally my privilege of serving you. But we all have to face it. It's a part of life. Mary faced it. We faced it. You face it. And what is it? It's the purifying of love. Well, you will not. I'll never forget that day when Becky didn't want to go out for a date with me, but she wanted to talk to Tim Smith on the telephone. I wanted to commit double murder. Why? All of a sudden, I've let go. I want to tell you something, Cindy, and all the other Cindy's here. It's just going to be like this. And the happiness of all the Jacqueline's here will be dependent upon how much your love is purified. And how much you can move over and say, there are others I want to have that will join me now. And you must love all of us. There's a Dr. Evans at the college. Now, college folks, you must love me. But there's another one here now. And there's another one in the bus ministry now. I cannot operate the bus ministry. There was a day when I could, but I can't anymore. And so there's a Brother Young and a Brother Moffat. I must move over. And for these many years, by the way, any success has got to be that way. You've got to get big enough to say you need others now. And finally, you'll have to say, whether I do it or not is not the issue. The issue is, I want it done for you. That's the purifying illustration. I once wanted to save America. I once, my heart broke for this country, and I said, by the grace of God, I'm going to do what I can to save this country. And I wanted to save America, and God knows America needs saving. But now, I love America more now than I did 20 years ago. If America would be saved by somebody else, and I could have no part in it at all, I believe I've gotten to a place where I can step back in the shadows and say, blessed be God. If I don't have a part, just somehow, God, raise up somebody that can help America to be salvaged. Who does it? That doesn't matter anymore. Doesn't matter. I just want it done. I gave my life. I've given much of my life to trying to encourage men of God to build great soul-winning churches across this nation. And if you'll let me be vain as I get older a little bit, I've said this before, you'd have a hard time finding a neighborhood in this nation that has not been influenced by this ministry right here. You really will. Go anywhere you want to go. You'd have a hard time finding anybody's neighborhood in America has not been influenced by the First Baptist Church in Hammond. You don't know that. Some of you folks that travel in the summertime, you know that. You go around this country, you know that. I gave myself. I mean it. I wouldn't call it a sacrifice, but I've not done things you've gotten to do. Things I would like to have done and things that aren't sinful to do. I've not gotten to do. There's some things I'd like to have done as I grew older. Didn't do it. Why? Because God knows I want every young person that leaves this church, wherever he or she goes in America, I want there to be a little First Baptist Church of Hammond waiting for them they can attend. Boy, I tell you, all over this nation, our young people are working in churches that have been transformed because of this ministry right here. Pastor's school, or my preaching engagements on Monday and Tuesday, all over the nation. Now, I wanted at one time to be the man that did that. I'm with him now for it just to be done. I want every village, city, neighborhood, town, hamlet, and village in America. I want there to be a man of God who walks with God and believes this book, every word of it, who goes soul winning and preaches righteousness and believes in standards and separation from the world. I'm the place now to where I believe my love has been purified enough to where somebody else can do it. Praise God. My name is associated with two things in America. You mentioned Jack Hiles, two things immediately. One, soul winning. Two, separation. You see, I still believe it's wrong to go to movies. You used to. I still do. I believe it's wrong to bring movies to your house. You are against the movies when you went to them, but it's okay to bring them to you. I think it's wrong to watch a movie on television. I think Hollywood's a cesspool of iniquity and as rotten as the devil. I still believe what you used to believe, that mixed bathing is wrong. And you won't change me. Brother Hiles, I like you, but I tell you what, you're getting too narrow. No, I'm not getting narrow. You're getting broad. You checked my sermons of 35 years ago. I preached against mixed bathing 35 years ago, and I don't see any chance of stopping. I preached against women wearing shorts 35 years ago. And by the way, I don't think you men ought to wear shorts around in public. I don't think it's the same thing as a woman wearing shorts. And if you play on an athletic team, I have no problems there. If you run in track, no problem. But there's a certain kind of a crudeness about the dress of our men these days, running around showing you hairy legs on the streets when you ought to put some pants on. You say, well, boy, you're getting more narrow all the time. No, you get the tapes. Always believe that. I preached against that before. I preached against ladies wearing shorts and pants before most of you were born. I'm not getting narrow. You're getting broad. One reason why you shouldn't wear your pants. That's a good one, isn't it? No, I'm saying, check it out. Get my tapes. I was preaching against smoking. I was preaching against mixed bathing. I was preaching against women wearing pants back when you were preaching against it. All I'm doing is I'm practicing now what all the pussyfooters used to preach. Yeah, same thing. Same thing. I don't see any place to change. I've stood for all these years in America for two things, basically, soul winning and separation. 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 I one time thought maybe I could be used of God to keep fundamentalists separate. Maybe I've had a little part in it, if to whatever extent we've done it. Though one of the saddest things in this nation has been the decay of standards and separation in our fundamental churches. But I'll be honest with you, I'm willing now, if somebody else can do it. I just want it done. I'd love to see before I die, doesn't matter whether I do or not, I'd love to see before I die an America like we had before. I'd love to see before I die fundamentalism take a turn once again for standards. I'd love to see these little pinheads quieten that they talk about legalism, 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 legalism. If you preach against anything, legalism, legalism. You're against women wearing shorts. That's legalism. Well, you're legalistic too. You don't believe in them going naked, do you? You're as legalistic as I am. We just have a different point. That's all. Different place where we stop. You got rules. If you believe that a woman has to wear anything at all, you got standards. No difference in us. We're no more legalistic than you are. We just draw the line a different place you do. But I believe I'm willing. If somebody can do it, if I could just get in a prayer closet somewhere and pray while somebody else would bring standards back to America, I could let it go. Same thing about soul winning. I believe I'm to the place to where I'd be willing to all the causes I embrace and all the people that I love. Though I'm the kind of guy that likes to be in the action. When I used to play football a little bit. I was the runt, but I was always underneath the pile when they got up, holding on to the guy's shoe. I always want to be in the middle. I learned years ago, safest place in the football game is right in the middle of the pile. You stand around, so about hit you in the rear and knock you out. Get in the pile. Jump in there, boy. That's the safest place. I like the action. Love it. Love it. I want to be a part of saving America. And I want to be a part of holding the standards. And I want to be a part of soul winning. And I want to be a part. Great churches being built. But if somebody else can do it, let me just get in the closet somewhere and I'll pray for you. Somehow or other, when love is purified, you don't want the person because of what they can do for you, and you don't want the person basically because of what you can do for them. You want the best done for them. Mary, I suspect you better loosen your grip a little bit. He's a junior hire now. He belongs to God, Mary. I know in 12 years you've forgotten maybe all about the purpose of His coming unless you stop and make yourself think about it. But Mary, time has come now. He belongs to the world. He's God's. He's not just yours. Mary, you think it's rough now. You think it's rough now, Mary. You wait till you hear Him one day say, "Woman, what have I to do with thee?" You wait till one day you see those little hands that you've washed, riven with nails. You wait till one day, Mary, you see those little feet that you taught to walk, bleeding on a cross. You haven't got anything to do to help. You wait till one day, Mary, you see those little lips that have kissed you, crying, "My God! My God! Why hast thou forsaken me? I thirst!" You wait, Mary. Somehow, I feel like a square peg in a round world. I feel helpless to try to explain to you what love really is. Love is not an attraction to somebody. Love is not, "I've got to have her. I've got to have her." I told you about the guy down in Fort Worth, Texas. One time I read a paper in Fort Worth, had a big picture on the front. Had a man dead. I mean, real dead. And a woman was standing there holding his dead head. He was a dead head. Holding his dead head in her arms. And a smoking gun. She had just shot him in the head. There she was, picture on the front page. She had the gun still pointing at his head, smoking. There he was, dead. She just killed him. And she said, "Oh, how I loved you." Somehow or other, I just never have wanted anybody to love me that much. If I can't have her, nobody will have her. If I can't have him, nobody will have him. I love him too much. That's not even close to love. Love is stepping back in the shadows. When it's purified, it's willing to step in the shadows. It doesn't want to, but it's willing to. In order that the object of the love receive its needs. Now I say this, and this is somewhat personal, and it may sound like boasting to you, but I'm going to say it anyway, whether you like it or not. Even when people leave First Baptist Church of Hammond and get a little peeved at me, I still keep up with them. And I still want somebody somewhere to love them. Probably shouldn't say this, but not too many months ago now. I found the name of every pastor in this area who pastors some people that used to go to this church. I wrote him a letter and told him that he was pastoring some former members and they're good people. And I love them. And I said, I want you to know I'm praying for you to be what they need. And I appreciate what you're doing with some of my babies. Born again in our church, or now in your church. And I say this realizing I may be criticized for it. But I bought every one of them out of my own pocket, a gift certificate for a new suit, and sent it to them as a gift for pastoring people that one time were members of the church here. See, you get mad at me and leave, I don't stop loving you. It's not good riddance, bad rubbish to me. And you can't stop that kind of love. It's going to follow you. It'll follow you when you hate me. It'll follow you if you hate me. It'll follow you. You won't get it. You can go to the highest mountain or the lowest valley. You won't get away from that kind of love. You won't do it. My love for you has nothing to do with what you can do for me, though I delight in it. My love for you has to do with my desire for you to have your needs met. How shallow our love is. Most of what we call love is nothing but self-gratification. When you hurt me, it's over. Isn't that something? When you hurt me, it's over. When you make me mad, it's over. It wasn't love. It wasn't love. Love never failed. If you're my enemy, that shouldn't matter. I love you. I want you cared for. Mary, you've got to get the place to where you want Jesus cared for. You've got to let your hand loose a little bit now. Cindy and Jack and all the Cindy's and Jack's here. I hate to say this. But that little girl, you're not rearing her for you. Every day of my life, I prayed for Tim Smith and Jack Scott and Johnny Murphy, though I did not know who their name, what their names would be. I prayed, for I knew who the husbands of our daughters would be. I prayed for God to help them wherever they were. Because one day I realized we were not rearing those girls for ourselves. They're reared for another. That's what you call love. Purified love. Last night, as far as Sunday was concerned, the actual day was yesterday. 27 years ago, Friday night, 22nd of August, 1959. I thought I'd choke to death. I really did. I'd been pastor of the Miller Road Baptist Church of Garland, Texas for almost 7 years. I was young, so we were all members of the church. We only had one lady over 50. And our old ladies' class in the church had 11 ladies' classes in Sunday school. A ladies' class number 11, the old ladies' class, was 35 and over. I thought we were there for a lifetime. All of a sudden, God spoke to me and said, you're supposed to go to Hammond, Indiana, to pastor First Baptist Church. The night I resigned that church, the minute I told the people on Wednesday night that I was leaving, not another word was said in the service. I broke down and cried, and everybody there got beside themselves. People lined the walls and put their head against the walls and screamed and cried. And folks went out in the yard and just to get out to cry. Not a word was said. We finally just scattered. I died. Literally died. Chairman of the deacons and one of the other deacons asked if they'd take me out to eat and tell me goodbye. They took me out to eat and I never said a word. Never spoke. I just sat there and cried. Never ate a bite. Sat there and cried the whole time. Finally, they took me home. 27 years ago, Friday night, we had moved out of our house. We were staying in a motel for the last night. We were there. I never went to bed. I got in the car and drove all over town. 27 years ago, last Friday night. I stopped in front of every house. And in those days, one family out of every seven went to Miller Road Baptist Church. You pass by seven houses in Garland, one of them belonged to us. And I stopped in front of every house I could find that I knew housed some of our families. And all night long, I just drove around town and prayed and cried. I died. Next morning, I preached as best I could. I said, well, tonight, preach my last sermon. We'll say goodbye. We went out and ate with the family that day at noon. Our family did. And I said to my family, I can't go back. The people came on Sunday night, 27 years ago, last night. They came to say goodbye to their preacher. But I was gone. We left. Went to church in Ardmore, Oklahoma, on the way to Hammond. I'd called a young man and said, preach, be there and tell the people I couldn't come. I never told them goodbye. I loved them. You take the love I felt for them 27 years ago last night and put it up the way I feel about you. It's like a child beside Goliath. It's like the ABCs beside R.G. Lee's vocabulary. It's like a little stone on the ground compared to the Rocky Mountains. And I want to give you a love that's purified. And that's why I can sit in my office sometime and realize that Dr. Evans is performing your ceremony, wedding ceremony, marriage ceremony, or Brother Colston or somebody else. And I rejoice. There was a time when I'd have shot Dr. Evans in the gizzard. That's all gone now. It's all gone. That's why when Alice Ferris is at the point of death, I die to go see her. But I can't. If I see her and don't see the others, I'll offend dozens of people. This good man goes. And I rejoice that she's cared for and that her family's cared for. Somehow, before we die, let's let our love get purified. Let's let the love of Christ flood our souls. Mary, we've all faced to an extent what you face today. All of a sudden, you can't be to him everything he needs. It's the way of life, Mary. You'll have to get used to it. You'll have to realize that there's some areas now that others will have to satisfy. And you'll have to be willing, Mary, step back in the shadows when they do and say, I rejoice that my son Jesus is loved.
I long for you to know what I'm talking about. I hurt for somehow, some way, our love to rise above. I love you when you do me good. I hate you when you do me bad. I long for our people to get above that. I love you if you love me. I hate you if you're my enemy. I long for you to graduate from that little kindergarten class of love. A hunger. And this may shock you, and I'll close with this. This may shock you. But I don't do it because I want you to love me with that kind of love. I do it because before you die, I'd like for you to feel its joy just one time. Father, bless the message.